Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we open our show with some breaking news stories, after which we'll be airing some Best of East County episodes, including our local East County Halloween ghost stories, and an interview with Raina Menashe, our own bookshelf editor, on her book, The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. This is Miriam Raftery on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we open our show with some breaking news stories, after which we'll be airing some Best of East County episodes, including our local East County Halloween ghost stories, and an interview with Raina Menashe, our own bookshelf editor, on her book, The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. We have a special treat for you today for Halloween, some local East County ghost stories. East County has many reportedly haunted places. There are many stories of ghost soldiers haunting the former Army barracks in Campo, the final home of the famed Buffalo Soldiers Cavalry Brigade. The old Julian Hotel's original proprietor from the 1800s reportedly haunts the establishment, startling guests in his former room who have claimed he's even tried to climb into bed with them. Out at the old Vallecito stagecoach station, the ghost of a bride, who never made it to the altar and died along the trail, reportedly roams the premises searching for her lost love, clad in the wedding gown in which she was buried. And out along Lakeside's Wildcat Canyon Road, if you see a woman beckoning to you to follow her off the road, don't go. Witnesses have claimed she turns toward her victims to reveal no face at all, a dark specter intent on luring motorists off an embankment to their deaths on a roadway where many people have died. But the most spirited area in our region is the Anza Borrego Desert, according to many detailed stories of ghosts that reportedly haunt those lonely trails, mountains, and washes in that harsh, forbidding terrain. Storyteller Cactus Jim has written, "Many travelers, prospectors, and adventurers have gone into the desert, never to return or be seen again. Others have returned with gold nuggets and treasures so rare that we could only dream of being so lucky ourselves. Desert lore, stories, and quests for loot and gold have made men greedy. Gunfights, murders, and death from starvation have left many dead on the barren desert trails. Their ghosts still walk the mountain ridges, gullies, and deserted locations they once traveled or lived, spirits with unfinished business, who cannot rest. Some guard buried treasures and lost mines, while others battle perpetually until death, forever replaying their last moments of life," Cactus Jim wrote. So here are a few of the most haunting tales in that region, adapted from Desert USA and the Paranormal Blogspot.
In the 1860s, when stagecoaches were the primary means of cross-country travel, a special stage set out from El Paso, headed for San Diego, with a box of coins. The stage that carried the coins had one driver and a guard. When the stage reached Yuma, Arizona, the guard fell ill and the driver continued on without him. That same stage was held up by robbers somewhere in the area where the route meanders into Carrizo Wash in East County's desert region, between the Fish and the Coyote Mountains. The driver was shot during the robbery and the thieves stashed the coins in the south slope of Fish Mountain. The coins remain there to this day, they say, because there were too many soldiers passing by on the trail for the bandits to retrieve their loot. It is said that after the robbery, the dead driver and the stage continued through Carrizo, and after that, the stage disappeared, never to be seen again, at least not in an earthly form. But some witnesses say that the phantom stage still forges its way through the deep sand, pulled by a team of four mules on moonlit nights. The phantom stage is driven by a lone driver hunched over as if asleep. No passengers are seen on the stage when it passes through Carrizo Wash, hesitating only a moment, as if planning to stop where the Carrizo station once stood, though it's now only a pile of mud. The phantom stage continues on past the old station until out of sight. In the morning, you may think twice about whether you actually saw the phantom stage until you find ruts carved from wagon wheels and fresh hoof prints left behind by the ghostly stage that travels on occasion as if to keep the trail alive.
Vallecito is known for its ghost. Its history contains many murders, deaths, robberies, and other wicked tales. One well-known story involves a double murder at Vallecito Station. It all started with a stage holdup in which $65,000 worth of loot was stolen by four men on horseback who robbed the eastbound stage before it reached Carrizo Wash en route to Vallecito Station. As the men fled the scene, the driver of the stage fired one shot, killing one of the four men. When he reached the thief he had shot, he found not one, but two dead bodies. The driver concluded that the leader of the band of thieves had shot one of his own men, so he would not have to divide up the loot. The bandit leader and one of the thief survived the robbery and buried their loot in nearby hills, then rode on to Vallecito Station for a drink and some food. But the two bandits began to argue while having a drink. The leader of the outlaws went outside to check on his horse, promising to continue the discussion when he returned. He did return, entering through the doorway, mounted on his big white horse, and he shot his companion. As the wounded bandit was dying, he drew his gun and fired back at the leader, killing him off the back of his brave white horse. The white stallion, spooked by the gunfire and death of his master, ran off into the hills. It is said that when someone is in the valley, around midnight, near where the bandits buried their loot, the ghost of a white horse will appear from nowhere, galloping through the sand and then disappearing without a trace.
If you find yourself out late in the desert night, somewhere between the Superstition Mountains and the 17 Palms, you may see the apparition of an 8-foot glowing skeleton. A prospector by the name of Charlie Arizona first saw the ghost about 4 miles southeast of Borrego. It was a dark night when Charlie set up for camp. Just as he was settling down for the night, something disturbed his burrows. Hearing their frightened braying, he went to investigate. A shadow loomed large. Suddenly, he saw a large human skeleton with a lantern light shining right through its ribs. The skeleton walked in a crazy fashion, as if looking for something or as if it were lost. Heart pounded, Charlie watched, transfixed as the skeleton disappeared over the ridge. About 2 years later, two prospectors camping in Superstition Mountains caught sight of the flickering light in the distance and wondered what it was, but it quickly disappeared. One of the prospectors thought it looked like a skeleton carrying a lantern, but they figured it was just the fire reflecting off a rock. The two prospectors didn't think much of the incident until a year later, when a traveler came into the Vallecito station with the tale of a skeleton he saw wandering in the desert carrying a light. It wasn't long before the news of the skeleton got around, and two adventurers went out into the desert to search for this legendary skeleton ghost. During their third night in the desert, they encountered the ghastly lit skeleton. One of the men shot at it with a gun, but the skeleton continued on, unfazed by the gunfire. The two men followed the skeleton for 3 miles as it wandered in a strange and intermittent gait, over ridges and through valleys, before they lost track of it. Many believe that the skeleton is the ghost of a prospector who discovered and worked the Phantom Mine, which has been lost for many years. The skeleton is no better off than the rest of us, for he continues to search for the lost Phantom Mine, wandering the dark desert nights looking for his final resting place.
Not far from the Phantom Mine lies another place where skeletons have been seen. During warm summer nights, when the moon is full, ghosts dance at Yaqui Well. The ghosts are said to be the spirits of three emigrants who were traveling from Yuma to California. In search of a shorter route through the desert, the emigrants arrived at Yaqui Well, exhausted and near death from lack of food and water. One of the three travelers drank from the well as much water as he could hold. He died shortly thereafter. The other two men also drank from the well, but survived. While moving their dead companion's body, the other two noticed some rock specimens that fell out of his pocket. The two men were excited to discover the rocks contained gold, but they did not know where their friend had found the samples. Their excitement about the gold turned into greed and distrust. The two men began to struggle until one finally drowned the other in the muddy water of Yaqui Well. An Indian watched these events unfold from a nearby hill. He tried to talk to the man who had survived, but the emigrant was still so excited as he told his story that he entered a state of frenzy and ran off into the desert yelling, "Gold! Gold!" It is only during the hot summer nights of the full moon that the three emigrants return to Yaqui Well. One rises out of the muddy waters of the Yaqui Well. One emerges from the brush nearby, and the third arrives in the cool breeze out of the wash. The ghosts join hands and circle Yaqui Well in a dance. Soon after the twirling begins, they disappear, leaving only the good waters of the well and a slight chill in the air.
In the 1800s, many stories began circulating about a ship lying half buried in the sands of the Anza Borrego Desert, and some say its spectral sails unfurl at times on a ghostly voyage, its phantom crew seeking their way back home. After the Civil War, many migrants who passed through the desert on their way to California reported seeing a Spanish galleon with multiple masts and swore this was no mirage. Most claimed that it was loaded with a fortune's worth of exquisite pearls. Many expeditions sought to retrieve these riches, but so far, none have succeeded. As the story goes, in 1610, King Philip III of Spain ordered Alvarez de Cordone to search off Mexico's coast and bring back pearls. Cordone hired two other captains, Juan de Iturbe and Pedro de Rosales. He also hired 60 pearl divers and had three ships built. In 1612, they set sail to plunder Mexico's west coast of its precious oysters. The ship paused repeatedly in its travels so that pearl divers could jump off and return with oysters they discovered on the ocean floor. Later, they found a village where Native Americans had baskets of pearls just lying about. The Spaniards arranged a trade of their fancy European clothing for the pearls, but instead swindled the Native Americans by giving them only rags and dirty cloths. Outraged, the Indians attacked the ship as it was trying to set sail. Cordone was hit by an arrow, and his ship was forced to turn around. But he ordered the other two ships on in the search of more pearls, commanding them to look north in the Gulf of California. As they journeyed up the Gulf, Rosales' ship struck a reef in a terrible storm. Before it sank, the crew transferred the valuable cargo to Iturbe's vessel, which sailed up the Gulf and eventually up the Colorado River and into the Salton Sea, or Lake Cahuilla, as it may have been called long ago. Some stories claim that the ship sailed into the Salton Sea to find the legendary Straits of Anian, an all-water route from the Gulf of California to the Gulf of Mexico. It's been said that the Salton Sea and the Colorado River ran high, filled with water during a flood that swept the ship into the vast inland sea. Some say that an earthquake happened, closing off escape. The captain was horrified to find the outlet to the ocean blocked. Water in the lake was swiftly evaporating. Soon the ship was beached on the California desert, many miles from the sea. The crew grabbed what few supplies they could carry and abandoned ship, trudging westwards toward the water. As the story goes, the survivors were finally picked up. Other versions of the tale involve a pirate ship loaded down with almost a million doubloons. Another story states that the ship was from King Solomon's navy, carrying the 10 lost tribes of Israel to North America. Another variation on this story claims that the Cahuilla Indians, knowing the Spanish were coming to take their riches and harm them, ambushed the Spanish party that came ashore. Then the tribe mounted a full attack on the galleon and after a fierce battle annihilated the entire crew. The Cahuillas began looting the ship of food and exotic items, but they could not move nor break into the heavy large iron chests in the hold. Then a storm brewed up, dousing the galleon. The Native Americans were forced to desert the ship, which broke from its anchor, drifted off into the storm, and sunk into the inland sea, taking its precious cargo with it. By the time the lake dried up years later, the ship had been long buried under tons of dirt, sand, and silt. How true could these stories be? Lake Kaweah did exist in the 16th century and had a tribe of Native Americans living nearby. It is possible that a flood occurred connecting the Salton Sea to the Gulf of California. The area between the desert and the Gulf has the potential to be hit with massive flooding, as we know from Hurricane Kathleen in the 1970s, which sent a 10-foot-high wall of water across the desert floor. So yes, it is plausible a ship could have been carried in on the surge and stranded afterwards as water receded. The sheer number of stories told by both Native Americans and frontiersmen through the centuries suggests some truth to these lost ship tales. Expeditions in search of the lost treasure ship began in the 1800s, after travelers heard tales from Native Americans. Some claimed that the ship seen in the desert was haunted and could only be found at certain times of the year. In 1870, several Indians reported seeing the ship west of Dos Palmas. Later that year, the Los Angeles Star published a series of short stories about Charlie Klusker, who claimed to have located the ship and its broken masts. He was organizing expeditions to bring back the missing vessel, which he claimed was filled with crosses. It was reportedly 50 miles from Dos Palmas in a region of boiling mud springs. But there were no further updates, and Mr. Klusker appears to have simply disappeared, much like the elusive ship. In 1878, three German prospectors said they saw the ship around sundown, about 120 miles northwest of Yuma and 40 miles east of Indio. The sighting actually cost one of the prospectors their lives. The two survivors reported seeing an immense ship under full sail floating over the desert, sailing like a cloud into the sunset. The prospector who died went after it in the next morning, but never returned. A rescue party eventually found him dead from a lack of water, and strangely, he was completely nude. In 1905, a prospector named Butcherknife Ike claimed to have discovered a fossil ship buried in the sand dunes of Borrego Springs. And in 1915, a Yuma Indian arrived in one town paying for his merchandise with pearls. When questioned, he claimed to have spent the night in a strangely shaped wooden house that was partially covered by sand. The people he spoke to offered him several hundreds of dollars for the night if he would take them back there in the morning, but he vanished overnight with their money. In 1933, Antonio de Fierro Blanco wrote a book discussing the story of Tiburcio Mancera, a young mule driver who claimed he came across the lost Spanish galleon way back in 1775. Back then, Tiburcio was a mule driver for explorer Juan Bautista de Anza, who was searching for a land route from Sonora to Alta California. The young mule driver said he went into the hold of the ship and actually saw a treasure trove of pearls, but was never able to relocate the evasive ship. Many treasure hunters have gone after the missing treasure of pearls, but none have brought back evidence of finding it. Perhaps because these are simply tall tales, or perhaps because the shifting sands of the desert at times reveal and at other times obscure the legendary lost ship. According to some storytellers, the ship itself, now bleached white and desiccated by the whipping sands, blown by the desert winds, has become a ghost. If you're out in the desert late some night, you may just see an eerie otherworldly glow and hear the singing of those long dead sailors, the skeleton of a ghost ship sailing into the sunset or adrift in the moonlight. Is the mysterious ship laden with the fortune and pearls still out there in the desert? Perhaps sailing spectrally over the sands? Perhaps one day when the sands blow the right way, we'll be lucky enough to find out.
Now we have one last hair-raising tale to tell, and this one is about the mysterious giant black cats reported to be prowling the wilds of East County. A reader tells us that sightings of huge black cats the size of mountain lions or bigger date back at least to the 1980s when witnesses described a black cougar near Highway 67 at the eastern end of Poway. Zoology experts claim there is no such thing as a black cougar or mountain lion, though they once said the same thing about black bobcats, until one was killed by a car and proof positive was found that these once legendary animals existed. Another possibility is a black leopard, an exotic pet that's escaped. But a more likely explanation for the many sightings here is that there are black jaguars in northern Mexico, big cats that when fully grown can be much larger than mountain lions. An adult male can weigh up to 350 pounds, though females can be about the size of mountain lions and cubs even smaller. Jaguars have golden eyes, squared heads, and very powerful jaws capable of taking down a full-sized crocodile in the wild. Officially, jaguars have been extinct in California for decades, but have they returned? Or perhaps they never really left. Yet another possibility is that jaguars have bred with mountain lions. That, too, is thought to be impossible, scientists say, but they once thought wolves could not breed with coyotes, until DNA testing proved that they did, and frequently. Many of the early sightings in San Diego County of large black wildcats have been made close to the border, some very near a gap in the border fence in Hukumba Hot Springs, where the terrain was too rugged to connect the fence up. Howard Cook, the former head of Hukumba's planning group, told me there have been regular sightings in recent years of a big black cat believed to be a jaguar, and also what appears to be a golden black spotted jaguar at Lake Hukumba. Such a pair could give birth to cubs that could be either black or spotted. He believes the big cats crossed over from Mexico, and the town librarian's son also saw what he described as a black panther crossing Old Highway 80 and Boulevard some years ago, though there's technically no such thing as a black panther either, a term used by ordinary folks to describe any of several big black cats. Gene Garrity told us that he and a friend, both farm boys, were out hunting above Loveland Reservoir south of Alpine back in 1994 when a huge black cat crossed the road in front of them. The tail was very fat and very long, he said. We got out of my Jeep, and we were looking at the paw prints in the mud. They were huge, with very huge claw marks. I estimate the cat was close to 200 pounds or more, he said. Assistant Border Patrol Chief Rosario Pete Vasquez told me, I saw one on Mount Laguna maybe 20 years ago. It was daytime, and there was snow on the ground, so you could definitely tell it was all black. That big cat weighed about 100 pounds, he estimated. One winter night in 2011, the Reader reported that a resident of Hapatool Valley south of Alpine, Warren Storm Thunder, claimed he saw a jaguarundi, a black cat from central Mexico that is a little smaller than a mountain lion. Sharon Cremosis, a rancher and a friend of mine, insists she saw a large black wildcat slightly smaller than a mountain lion while driving her golf cart on a ranch she owned in a remote area of Boulevard near the border. A neighbor of hers has also seen black wildcats, she told us, and she's also seen mountain lions and is confident in her description. Ariel Brook, one of our very own writers, who is also a teacher, saw a large black cat running across a roadway in Deerhorn Valley about a year ago. It looked like a black mountain lion and moved like a wild animal, she said, adding it had a long cat-like tail. In 2012, a resident of Aguanga near Warner Springs at the base of Cahuilla Mountain reported she heard her dogs going ballistic and walked outside to see a huge black cat perched on a boulder near her barn, which had a pig, a goat, and horses stabled inside. She said the cat was creeping up the rocks and had glistening circles of gray on its black fur. It was smaller than a mountain lion, and it sounds to us like a black jaguar cub, which can have spots faintly visible. On a blog post, she wrote that neighbors saw the same thing. And the Union Tribune published a report in December 2013 of a couple near Miramar Reservoir who claimed to see a large gray-black cat about 4.5 feet long that swiftly vanished into brush on a steep hill above the water. There have been many sightings locally, though none have been documented with photos, perhaps because these mysterious creatures move swiftly and are often spotted at night. Plus, frightened observers may be more concerned with not becoming dinner than with snapping a photo. We first reported on these mysterious black cat sightings back in 2014, and our readers deluged us with their tales. A reader in the Anza area, in the northeast part of our county, says there were several sightings in 2014 in her area as well. A Pine Valley reader said she was putting out food for a small feral cat in her gazebo one night when she was startled to see what looked like a panther with an unusually strong build, a big head and coal black fur that she believes was a jaguar. I sure froze in my tracks, she told us, adding that she slowly backed up to her door just as the cat dug in its claws into the carpeting on the gazebo she'd been standing on a moment earlier and pulled up the carpet off the cement. On September 1st, that's just last month, Forest Service volunteers Peter and Chris Ruth wrote to warn us that hikers saw a large animal resembling a big black cat in a tree near Cedar Creek Falls in the Julian area, a popular hiking destination. Soon after, two women volunteers hiking the trail to pick up trash heard growling noises three times and promptly exited the area. Were those black jaguars? Or possibly black bears? Another species thought to be extinct here that have since been documented to have returned, though still rare. In 2013, a Border Patrol camera caught proof positive on an infrared camera in Inkapa where a black bear ran across the road. But the big black cat sighting at Cedar Creek Falls becomes more plausible given a second big black cat sighting reported on October 26, just days ago, to our news publication by Cameron Forbes, who says he and his son saw a giant black cat walking past a campground in broad daylight at Pines Anita in the Julian area, the size of a mountain lion or even bigger. These huge black predatory cats have also been seen in Spring Valley. Last year, a retired U.S. Navy chief, Manuel Domingsong, said he heard his chickens making noise and he went out to find a giant black cat inside the coop. It killed a chicken that night, and at 5 a.m. the next morning, he went out to check his coop and found the black cat back inside, and the rest of his chickens were dead. The large cat leaped over a fence right in front of him. 2 months later, a college professor, Dan Moody, told us that his mother, Dee Moody, a retired high school teacher, saw a jet black big cat weighing at least 70 pounds that sauntered across an open field beside her Spring Valley house in broad daylight. She described it as black and shiny, with a tail at least half as long as its body. And then on Christmas Day last year, a retired professor came across two dead coyotes at the end of her cul-de-sac on the eastern side of Dictionary Hill in Spring Valley. Their throats had been slashed, and the bodies were still warm. Only a very large predator, likely a huge cat, could have killed coyotes, which are themselves a predatory species. We do have coyotes across East County, and you may hear their mournful howls at night. But if you're walking out in the dark in East County, and you happen to catch a glimpse of a huge black shadowy cat, or hear the growl of a large animal, remember the sage advice of poet Ogden Nash, who wrote, "When called by a panther, don't anther."
We hope you've enjoyed these haunting tales from East County. We extend our special thanks to the participants in today's special presentation: Miriam Raftery, Leon Thompson, Devario Bell, Tasha Matthews, Liz Alper, and this is Ed Barena. From all of us at East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio, to all of you, our listeners, we wish you a chilling and thrilling Halloween. Happy haunting!
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
This is Miriam Raftery, host of the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I'm also guest hosting Bookshelf because my guest today is Raina Menashe, our host of Bookshelf. Raina's fiction has been honored by organizations such as the San Diego Writers and Editors Guild, San Diego Book and Writing Awards, and the Southern California Writers Conference. Her first novel, Twice Begun, and her second novel, Silent Bird, were both finalists in the 2012 and 2013 San Diego Book Awards. And her newest novel, a paranormal suspense titled The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake, was released in spring 2021. Her first children's book, The House That Sneezed, will be released early next year. She is currently writing Thrice Begun, the sequel and prequel to Twice Begun. Her website, RainaMenashe.com, includes blogs on psychology and wellness, writing, and other social commentary. Also a licensed clinical social worker, Raina Menashe has taught psychology and counseling at Southern California universities, as well as therapeutic techniques to human service professionals. In addition, she's a workshop leader at the Southern California Writers Conference in San Diego and Irvine. She created a class called Character Therapy, and you're the shrink. I love that. And it's alive to emphasize the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Raina has served as vice president of the Kronos Theater Group, and she often uses dramatic as well as therapeutic techniques in her creative work. And of course, as host of our bookshelf right here on East County Magazine's radio show in San Diego, Raina interviews local authors and sometimes national ones about their creative processes. And you can find more about her at her website, RainaMenashe.com. And that's spelled RainaMenashe.com. Raina, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's so much fun to be on my own show.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it, being the interviewee
yes.
instead of the
yes.
interviewer.
It feels a little strange.
Yeah. I've got to ask, switching from prior genres, and you're really noted for crossing genres in your books that really defy definition. How difficult was it to switch from psychological romance novels that dealt with some heavy subjects such as addiction and recovering from different traumas into writing paranormal suspense?
Well, in some ways, I see it as consistent because in a way, the suspense book really has a lot to do with trauma and the stories that we tell to comfort ourselves, to soothe ourselves after a trauma, the different paths we choose or don't choose, how we heal or don't heal. I'm always doing this psychological thing, but I put it in a different kind of story. I think I've always wanted to write something scary, scary in the more paranormal sense, and I've been hinting in that direction, and so I decided to just kind of plunge in and do it, and it was very different writing
yeah.
this book.
Well, I've read Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. I enjoyed it, even though it did keep me up all night. It is a page
turner. Oh, yay.
So you did your job.
Yeah.
Where did you dream up your ideas for this creative book, Raina, in which people are drawn to this beautiful but perilous Shy Moon Lake and the secrets from the past that it holds?
Well, and it started with an idea. What if you were in a place where your karma, so to speak, what you sow, you know, what you reap, you sow, comes back at you really quickly, where you get what you deserve, or you don't get what you don't deserve, or at least people think that's what happens. And then I sort of, you know, it just meanders off. I mean, this book took about a decade to write. And in that process, it changed quite a bit, but it had a lot to do with what people believe again, what they tell themselves, how we often don't know what's true, what's not true.
Interesting. What was the inspiration for your main character, Jess McCourtney, and for that matter, any of the other key characters that are so compelling in this book, Raina?
Well, you know, sometimes people have always asked me that, especially, well, in my former books as well. And sometimes they think it's me because I often write in the first person.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're all like bits and pieces of me. It's like one big salad or a collage. I think Jess has parts of me for sure. Raising a small boy, the pains, traumas, and incredible joys of motherhood are in there. What it's like to experience betrayal is in there. You know, these are things that everyone experiences, or not everyone, but many people experience. The main character, Charlie McCourtney, her husband, he's a poet. And I think I explored a lot about artists there. Again, what they tell themselves, the stories they tell themselves, how they comfort themselves, how they cope with life's dilemmas and mistakes. Now, the other sort of the residents of the town, I really just had plain romping fun with that. I wanted to make them superstitious, but I wanted to create superstitions and beliefs that don't currently exist. I didn't want to trot on anyone's beliefs or, you know, traditions. I just sort of made up my own. So the whole thing is imagination from beginning to end. But again, why do people believe what they believe?
Who knows? Yeah, fascinating psychological angles in this. So you actually finished writing and marketing the book in the middle of a global pandemic and lockdown. How challenging was that? Or maybe it was the opposite. Maybe you found you had a lot of time on your hands all of a sudden.
Well, I had already written it and I had done most of the editing, final editing, for a long time, actually. And what the pandemic did is when it started, it just kind of took the oomph out of me. Mm-hmm. I had two book launches, two or three that I canceled because I didn't want to do them virtually. Virtual launchings are fine. It's just that I wanted to read this aloud, you know, live.
So you were saying it just sort of took the oomph out of things. In what ways?
I had all this excited preparation that I had to change. So there were live book launches that I had to cancel. And also, I have to say, I got a little depressed, like lots of people, you know, with the shutdown.
Sure.
And I guess it took a lot of, it took me longer. It took me longer. I just kind of sat on it for several months. So and then it inspired, of course, other books, because you're thinking pandemic themes.
Oh, my gosh. Let's talk about finding the silver lining there.
Right? Yeah. Not that anyone wants to hear about a pandemic right now.
Did you try any virtual events?
I did. I've gotten used to it. I think we go kicking and screaming into things that we're not used to. I'm a clinician, as you know, in my day job, and I do those meetings virtually.
As we're doing this interview via Zoom right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think now I would do a virtual book launch, but at the time I was still, you know, I wanted to do things live.
Yeah.
So it was disappointing in that way, but you do end up saving some money during a pandemic if you're still employed. And so use some of those things to revamp my website. You know, as I said, make lemons out of lemonade if you can.
There you go. Raina, can you read an excerpt for us from The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake?
Sure, I would love to. I'm going to take an excerpt that's fairly early on. It's page 23 in the book. And I'll begin where the little boy, Jonah, they just moved to Shy Moon Lake, the family, that's Jess, her husband, Charlie, and Jonah. And the little boy, Jonah, was climbing on the balcony right away the second they got to their new house and almost fell and hurt himself. And so the mother is shaken up. This is the scene right afterwards. Mm-hmm. Mommy, are you mad at me? No, you just scared me, honey. I'm fine now. Sorry I raised my voice. He thought about that and smiled. Yeah, he would forgive me. Big of him. Then he stood on his tippy toes, peering towards the lake. Who's that? Who's who? He pointed. There, in the water. I squinted at the inky blackness, recalling the town legend about long ago lovers drowning. Sorry, honey, it's too dark. You're just seeing tree shadows. There were indeed tree shadows, thrown by starlight, shifting across the dark water like a flutter of insects. Silhouettes of trees appeared suspended between opposing diadems of light. The Milky Way above and its reflection on the waters of Shy Moon Lake below. How thrilling, I thought, to view a night sky containing more than six or seven stars. Against this luminous, scintillating dome, anything seemed possible. Like, I wondered, what would happen to all this beauty if there was an earthquake? Violent quakes had no doubt accompanied the birth of the volcano that now cupped the lake. How many points on the Richter scale could these cottages endure before windows shattered, porches toppled, the land crumbling beneath our feet? Maybe we will need to climb inside that refrigerator. Mrs. Paddock said, Mrs. McCourtney, are you all right? I shook off the unwanted gloom. I might not be as congenitally cheerful as my husband, but I was not usually like this either. Yes, thank you. I'm fine. I'm just tired. It's been a long day. As Charlie rose back up the steps, the upper half of his body hidden behind boxes and bags, a door slammed. A porch light flicked on in the cottage next door. We looked over. A woman with short, darkish hair gazed back at us, her expression flash frozen. Good evening, I called, waving, happy for the distraction. We're moving in. She did not reply, just stared. She had to have heard me. The cottages were not that far apart. I stepped to the end of the porch. My name is Jess. This is my husband, Charlie, and our son, Jonah. We've bought this place and we're moving in right now. Still no response from the lady next door. Was she ill? Disabled? Finally, as if set to a delayed timer, her eyebrows went down and a smile opened up nice and big. Well, hello. Welcome.
What a marvelous and somewhat chilling piece of foreshadowing that is.
Thank you.
Love it. I've got to ask you about your class, Character Therapy and You're the Shrink, emphasizing, as we've noted, the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Can you tell us a little bit more about that for people who may be interested?
Yes, this class is really, it's really personal. It's like an art project for me. When I was little, I couldn't decide between being a writer and being, say, a psychologist. So basically, I kept going back and forth between the two of them. This class is really putting it all together. I take all these psychological theories that I learned in my master's degree in my profession and look at a character from all these theories, the child development theories, where did your character get stuck in developmental tasks that causes current behavior, or looking at defense mechanisms and thought distortions, and sort of really looking into these explanations that we've developed to understand your character better if you choose to. Now, do I do that with my characters? I think I do it more on an informal level, but I also hand out to the people who attend the class, I hand out lots of worksheets so that they can revisit these theories and play with them. Play with your characters. Have fun. This is the sandbox.
Very wise advice. The characters are really what drives a novel, I think, even more than plot. So that begs the question of what are you working on next?
Well, Twice Begun, which was my first novel, has to do about with sort of reinventing yourself after, you know, a huge betrayal, and how sometimes the people that we think are better people don't turn out to be as good as people who have been through very hard times and have risen above.
Yeah.
There is a house in that book, it's her great aunt's house in Coronado, that was a home for hysterical women during World War II. And a lot of readers said, man, I wanted to learn more about that house. And when are you going to write the sequel to the book? I want to know what happens to this former social worker who gets involved with a person who's a recovering addict or former client, which is taboo. Anyway, so yeah. I decided to write this sequel and prequel. Ah. So it goes into the great aunt's youth in this house, as well as, so that's called Thrice Begun. I'm about, you know, halfway, maybe three quarters of the way through that. And then there's a children's story called The House That Sneezed that is really four drawings. I'm not doing the drawings, but it's very near completion. So that one also has psychological themes, basically to help little kids deal with grief by using a metaphor of the house that's not feeling well.
And very timely right now with a pandemic that's killed 700,000 Americans as we speak.
If I could say that that book was inspired by when I worked with little kids and families, and I was looking for that book to use with the children that I worked with, and I couldn't find it. So I finally said, okay, well, let's create it.
So it's really filling an important need. Well, Raina, you're just so versatile, and I want to thank you today. We are out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing all of your marvelous literary knowledge with us. Readers, you can find more about Raina Menashe and her books at rainamenashe.com, and that's spelled RainaMenashe.com.
It was a pleasure, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You've been listening to the Bookshelf segment on East County Magazine's radio show on KNSJ, bringing you news about local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This year's open enrollment period for health insurance is right around the corner, starting in 2 weeks on November 1st. Some employer-based health plans start their open enrollment even earlier. People looking for insurance on the individual market can go to the Covered California website, coveredca.com. James Scaleri, a spokesperson for the state's health insurance marketplace, says people might be surprised by the choices they find.
Many consumers are finding out that if they weren't eligible before, now they are. Or if they got a small subsidy A few years ago, that's increased, so coverage may be more affordable than they thought. So really, regardless of your income, check out your options and see whether or not you can lower your monthly premiums.
In California, the projected average premium for 2022 was $581 a month, a 1.8% increase over 2021, according to acasignups.net. But almost 90% of people who get their health insurance through Covered California get subsidies to bring down their monthly bill. The subsidies began with the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan, and the new Inflation Reduction Act has extended them for another 3 years. Dr. Rhonda Randall, Chief Medical Officer at UnitedHealthcare, encourages people to consider their family's unique needs when choosing a plan.
Some things to consider are prescription drug benefits, mental health coverage, specialty benefits, things like dental, vision, hearing, critical illness insurance, and wellness programs.
This year, 13 insurers are participating in the Covered California Exchange. That means people in all counties will have a choice of at least two plans, and 81% can choose from four or more plans. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
4 environmental groups, led by Preserve Wild Santee, have filed a lawsuit seeking to overturn Santee's approval last month of Finita Ranch, the 3,000-unit residential project that's been hotly contested for decades. In the suit filed in San Diego Superior Court, the groups say the city violated state laws governing new development as well as city and state election codes. Plaintiffs also contend that a revised environmental impact report, or EIR, is still inadequate, especially regarding lack of adequate evacuation routes in case of a major wildfire. On September 14th, the Santee City Council approved Finita Ranch 4-0, with Councilman McNellis recusing himself because the project would benefit his property. The council used a new law it passed in August 2021 called the Santee Essential Housing Program as the legal basis for this approval. The law provides a system where new development projects can get construction permits in an expedited fashion if they earn minimum points for things like affordable housing, reduced greenhouse gas emissions, water and air quality, recreation and park enhancement. The council's approval of Finita Ranch bypassed Measure N. That's a referendum that was approved by the majority of Santee voters in 2020. It required any new project that involves a change to the general plan to go on the ballot. Van Collinsworth, director of Preserve Wild Santee, an environmental and political action group, says the council created this new law for the sole purpose of circumventing a public vote on Finita Ranch. He says, essentially, the city made up a law that says they can break the law, so let's face them in court. We need to find out what the court will rule on that because it has implications well beyond Santee. The lawsuit argues that because the 2,600 acres north of Santee Lakes, where Finita Ranch is planned, is in a very high fire hazard severity zone, it makes no sense to build 3,000 homes that would bring in about 10,000 new residents. Peter Broderick, an attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, says California's affordable housing crisis doesn't give cities free rein to build unsafe homes in places like Finita Ranch. To prepare for the next disaster, he says, we have to be smarter about where we build, with safety plans that account for the realities of fast-moving fires. Broderick says the project also should be denied because it would have a significant negative impact on the area's natural habitat and further endanger several species, including the Kino checkerspot butterfly, California gnatcatcher, and Crotch's bumblebee. The Santee City Council originally approved Finita Ranch in 2020. To entice support, developer Home Fed promised it would pay for significant highway and road improvements before the first owners moved in. The approval triggered a voters' referendum challenging the decision, which qualified to be put to a public vote. But after the council put the project on the ballot for this November, a judge ruled the project's EIR was inadequate due to those lack of evacuation routes, and it ordered the city to rescind the earlier approval. Using that ruling, the council determined a vote was unnecessary because there really wasn't a project to vote on, and it pulled the measure from the ballot. And then, at the September meeting, where the revised version of the project was approved by the city council, Mayor John Minto said Home Fed followed the law, and we follow the law, and now we have a project. Mayor Minto also predicted the council's decision would be challenged. A call and text to the mayor requesting comment for this story was not returned. Vice Mayor Ron Hall says the lawsuit is not a surprise to anybody and lamented that California mandates cities provide housing, and then when a city complies, it gets sued. Told that the suit calls out the EIR's inadequacy,
again notably on the extent of impacts from a fire. Hall says the city relied on experts who advised the city on evacuation plans and other parts of that environmental impact report. Now it's up to the court to agree or disagree on the adequacy. Hall says he's open to hearing alternative solutions on what to do with Finita Ranch, including, potentially, retaining it as a recreational preserve if a viable plan is presented. Hall says, "I'm not sold on Finita Ranch, never have been, although he's voted for it," adding, "Frankly, if it does go away, I have no problem with that." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. Hi, this is Connie again, and I'm talking to you about what you should be thinking about planting now. And in another couple of weeks, you better not be thinking about it. You better be doing it. So what do we start with in the fall? You think green. Think of all those greens that you love to eat, because this is the time to get them in the ground. Asian greens, mustard greens, spinach, and my favorite, beet greens. Except you get a double payoff with beets. In fact, you get about a 5 or 6 payoff with beets, because every little beet seed that you are planting actually is an old dried up flower, and it contains 5 or 6 seeds in it. So when those beets come up, you've probably wondered in the past, why, if I only planted 1 beet there, do I have 5 little plants there? What you can do is wait until they get to be about 2 inches tall, and then using your very most delicate touch, wet the soil and carefully, using your fingers on the leaves, pull out those extras. Leave the biggest one in place, pull the others, and immediately replant them 3 or 4 inches away from the mother plant, or start another row, but get them a ways away from each other so that they will each have room to grow. As they grow, you can enjoy pulling off an occasional big leaf and stir-frying it or cooking it up, braising it in a pan. They're my favorite greens, like I said. Eventually, much later, you will end up with full-grown beet roots that you can pull out and cook. So now's the time to start your beets. What else can you start now? Broccoli, everything in the cabbage family, kale plants. Pull the old ones from last year that are dried up over the summer. Get some new kale going. You can start cilantro now, and you will have to replant it again in about 2 months, because cilantro doesn't last forever. It goes to flower too soon. But at this time of year, with the cooler days and nights, it takes longer for it to bolt into flower. So cilantro is a great thing to grow right now. Right now, I just started my peas. I use Chinese edible pod peas, but any kind of peas can be started now. What you want to do is soak those seeds overnight or even for 48 hours and then plant them. Poke them into wet soil, get them down about 1 inch or so, 1.5 inches, cover them well. And I want to mention, when all these seeds that you plant, the smaller the seed, the closer to the surface you plant it. And always press down hard. Annie's Annuals up in Richmond is run by a delightful woman who talks about how she started her first batch of annual plants. She planted them outdoors in flats. The seed flats were right there. She was so upset because her cat ran across the seed flats when she was through planting them. What happened was those were the only seeds that came up. So that was a lesson to her, and it's a lesson to all of us. Press down on the soil after your seeds are in the ground so you have good contact as well as the moisture, so things will start early. You can grow radishes year-round. You can start scallions and green onions right now. Swiss chard, I would suggest that you get that in the ground right away, hopefully by the 1st of October, because Swiss chard likes
the warm soil to start. In fact, all of these seeds like the warm soil to start, and then they appreciate the cooler days as they grow and get larger.
San Diego County supervisors have approved new water tanks and backcountry helicopter hydrants to give firefighting helicopters more water sources during wildland firefighting. East County's worst wildfires have occurred in late October, including the devastating Cedar Creek and Witch Creek firestorms, yet drought has drained some natural water sources. Aiming to prevent disasters, County Fire and Cal Fire have developed a strategy to place Gila hydrants and Gila pods in a ring along the northern and eastern edges of San Diego County. The strategy identified locations in unincorporated areas that would benefit from additional water sources based on wildfire risk assessments and helicopter travel times. The goal is to give firefighters additional support to contain a fire early and avoid or lessen property damage and loss of life. Gila hydrants are 5,000-gallon stationary water tanks connected to a municipal water source. A firefighting helicopter crew can siphon water to refill the aircraft's tank, allowing more frequent water drops in areas that don't have natural water sources. The Gila hydrant will automatically refill so it's full for the next helicopter needing water. Last year, the region's first Gila hydrant site was established in North County by the Rainbow Municipal Water District through a partnership with Cal Fire San Diego and North County Fire. This fall, County Fire will partner with the San Marcos Fire Department and Vallecitos Water District to install a Gila hydrant in San Marcos and at a new fire station planned in Jacumba in East County. County Fire and Cal Fire are also placing large Gila pods around the county. Gila pods are portable 5,000-gallon pools of water that do need to be manually refilled by a water tender or from a municipal water source. Gila pods provide fire crews a water source to refill helicopter water tanks closer to a wildfire. A Gila pod is already in use at Cal Fire stations in Julian and El Cajon. This fall, more Gila pods will be placed at the Rainbow Fire Center in Fallbrook and at the McCain Valley Fire Camp in Boulevard. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Bueco, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.